Hello and namaste. I'm Peter Furco, and this is Peter's Podcast, where we talk about real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living. Thanks for joining me.
I'm still teaching in Europe this month, and in today's episode, I'm in Stockholm talking to author, educator, and fellow Ishta Yogiraj, Ulrika Norbury, a dear friend whom I've gotten to teach with in the past. We share our takes on yoga and deep living. While I'm in Europe, you can see me at the Helsinki Ishta Pop-Up Studio, where I'm teaching two meditation workshops August 4th and 11th. I'm also headed to Berlin for a talk and meditation evening on August 7th. See the show notes on your podcast app or peterspodcast.simplecast.com for details. You can also look for me on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Here's the interview. I hope you enjoy it.
Namaste.
I'm here with Ulrika Norbury in Stockholm, Maria Torget. Say that the right way.
Maria Torget.
Yeah, that's where we are. Talking about yoga, real yoga, actual happiness, and deep living, which is another way of saying what we decided to talk about, which is how you live your yoga.
Yep.
Yeah. So we had fun today sightseeing. So if my feet start crying in the middle of the podcast.
Or if we start yawning. Too much prana and oxygen.
Yeah.
The garden.
So you're living your yoga this summer by taking time off.
Yeah. Doing more of staycation.
Yeah.
And that's my type of vacation.
And how's it feel?
Great.
Yeah.
Well, it's just really nice not to have an agenda whatsoever. Just to wake up every day, you know, enjoying waking up, not having any plans. Just be like, okay, should we eat breakfast now or maybe in an hour? And take a morning walk, morning swim, whatever. Yeah. You know, whatever feels logic.
Yeah.
Within the family unit and then go from there.
Yeah.
See what the day brings and what the weather gives and that to me is a part of yoga that we very rarely get to encounter and experience when we live a more maybe urban lifestyle or you know, even yoga can become very rigid,
right.
You know, in the way, like, I get up every morning and I do this by practice, and then I do this, I go and teach, or I go and do whatever I need to do in my day.
Yeah.
So that's like living a yoga in a mundane, normal kind of setting. But here you get to a different flavor on your yoga practice.
Right.
It's more like you have the open time frame to really start to yoke into listening.
Listening. Yeah. We were talking about that a little sitting in the park today about this difference of looking stuff up, figuring out how to do it versus doing your research, but then listening inside for what comes. The Bhagavad Gita has this description of what's a person in sattvaguna, and it's this person who's knowing that what's happening is all the gunas doing their action, and that we're just in it. We're just watching it, participating in it, but it's being done from the outside. We're so keyed into doing everything. So I wonder what it would feel like, you know, in urban life, since you've made that distinction, versus vacation life, right? To be like looking and saying, the gunas are doing everything and I'm just here. Oh, I'm the observing energy.
Well, it's a real privilege, you know, to be a witness, you know, to just have that time frame. But I think in my life, it's about making a decision, like an active choice. So that's also part of living my yoga, to ask myself, okay, what do I need? What does my family need right now? What do we actually, instead of just talking about it, you know, make space for it and try it out.
Right.
Live a little less, you know, not so much grandiose, so let's go out and take out, like, cook your food and get out in nature and find whatever is available.
Right.
It's also an extreme luxury,
right,
you know, to downsize in a way, downscale.
Yeah.
But it literally took me 3 weeks to get down to a level where I can function again. And that was really scary in a way, because
the transition time was so long.
It was so long.
Yeah.
It was longer than I thought it would be. So I had like this conceptual idea of like, oh, I'm so yogic.
Yeah.
No, not really, but yeah, you know, but
how you have much expectations of what your skills are, you know.
Yeah, maybe I underestimated my real need for this.
Yeah.
It was a dream for me for so long to have weeks. Like I did something like that last year.
Mm-hmm.
I made a conscious choice of not working any weekends for 8 weeks last spring. So I had 8 weekends off and I only worked during the weeks.
Right.
And
like a normal person,
exactly. Like a normal person. Well, usually in the spring, I try not to work as much.
Yeah.
Because it's so nice to be enjoying, you know, the spring and the weather, and also
and
usually
the light shifts in that time of year too here in Stockholm.
And it's very beautiful.
Yeah.
And rather than just brush through and, you know, I can enjoy being outside and. I think the key factor for me is to bring in more enjoyment into my living, like appreciation, enjoyment, pausing, reflection, pondering about things rather than finding answers to questions.
Yeah.
See whatever arise and interesting aspects and nuances and things like that. It's a very yinish approach to life, but it seems like it makes my life more interesting.
Yeah, that's yin-ish, as in yin and yang, not as like Finnish or yin-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it can be whatever you want. It can be whatever you want, but it's more of the things, you know, yin stands for the shady side of things, which I really, I like that aspect of things, like what do I don't know, what's not in the picture, is it important to know what's not in the picture, or is it important, like, just pause long enough for things to come to you rather than you go and chase after it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extreme privilege these days,
such a different way of acting. I mean, I think there, it's almost an experiment, and it's interesting because the way that you're talking about your summer, it was like an experiment to see what happens if I don't do the things that are offered to me or the things that I was thinking about doing, what comes up. And it sounds like the experiment was a success.
Yes.
So then the next phase of the experiment, if we were a researcher, could be like, you know, apply that in a more active part of the year and see, is that a success? Like, how much, I don't know, it's funny because I feel like I, in my own life, had a period over the past 5-6 years where I had less to do, but I got a lot accomplished.
Yeah.
And not the kinds of things I would have thought I would spend my time on, but things that were really rewarding.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is a start of something.
Mm-hmm.
It emerged last year with actually 2 years ago where I made my conscious choice, because the way I plan my life, it's maybe really strange for a lot of people. Like, I plan 2 years ahead, and I was actively starting to plan pauses, like, to a much higher degree than I've ever done in my life. Like, okay, I'm not going to work here. I blocked out things, even though fun projects emerged. Like, can you do this? I'm like, nope. Have to find. So it's a commitment. It was a commitment to myself.
Right.
And to my own evolution.
Yeah.
I think, like, I need to do something. I'm going to explore this slowly.
Right.
So, and then this summer I was like, I'm going to have these 8 weeks off, not going to plan as much, maybe two, three, tops, four things.
Yeah.
So far we have been able to do that.
Yeah.
And I have more sharpness in everything in a way. And I'm very intrigued of taking this on more.
Yeah.
And things that I never thought I would be interested in, like baking. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, like this winter, I was like, I'm going to start baking. I've never baked in my entire life. Mm-hmm. So that turned into something I wanted to explore, and gardening. Like my sister probably is very happy about that, but you know, because I was always
the
gardener.
Yeah.
And I've always been, you know, with my friends, the girl with the black hands, so to speak. Like
the opposite of the green thumb.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But, you know, starting to, you know, see other things.
Yeah.
Not with an ambition of making it into something.
Right. It's just... I think that's something that's really unique, too, that often we think about doing something as either an unwinding, like you're going to do something like... you know, go on a vacation where your mind gets to totally like dissolve into swimming or drinking or something thrill seeking, but not so much what you're talking about when you set aside time for just like doing a thing just for itself, just for its own sake. It's not for making you either succeed or making you get ready so you can go back and succeed, but it's just like time to do a thing for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's actually enables me not to have any measurements or ambitions.
Yeah.
Like I baked like the other week and I tried to do a recipe I've never done in my life. Probably the hardest type of buns you can ever do. But I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to try it. I'm going to exchange the wheat flour into almond flour,
right,
and I did all these experiments. But then my husband goes like, well, you can't just exchange whatever with whatever,
right?
You need to see what kind of substance it is chemically. And I'm
right.
like, okay. So I investigated that a little bit, you know. And 10 years ago I would have been frustrated with him saying that, because I'm like, oh, you're such a chemist and scientist and engineer, and I want to do it my way,
right.
Like the little rebel little girl that wanted to do it her way. It's my way, you know, it's my thing. And I really paused and I listened to it, and I'm like, okay, I'm just gonna that's an interesting thought. So I also see when I do things in a new way my own progression as a human being and as a yogi and as a that is very rarely happening elsewhere in my life, where I can see the change of my practice.
Right.
I can actually see it because I notice it in the now.
Right.
That's the best thing.
Yeah.
With this whole year.
Yeah, that's a great segue, because I wanted to talk about, like, when we're talking about the yoga and the impact or having it be in life, what we're talking about is doing a practice and then having that practice yield a result. And the result isn't like a thing. It's more like you do this and then you become you in a better way, and then you go about your life and you've been changed by your practice.
Yeah.
So then life has this different quality to it. And what you're finding this summer is this different quality is more space around observing and more wonder from what you see and more willingness to listen and all of these great things you're describing. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's pretty great. I mean, it would be fascinating to do an experiment with people in general and say, you know, try that for a month and see what comes of it and report back, you know, put comments in my comment page about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One thing I also decided was not to write about it.
Because the documenting becomes then a thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I did ponder this quite a bit before I went into it, because I know the pitfalls, because I'm a writer. And I like to write things or make notes or documentation of you know, or whatever, or immediately bring it into my practice and try it out, you know, like the little researcher. Okay, right. I wonder what, but how this is going to affect my breath in my Nadi Shodhana or in my meditation or whatever technique I'm using.
Yeah.
Because it can so often be like, oh, I found this new thing. I'm so excited. I'm going to try it out.
I'm going to share it on Instagram.
I'm going to share it. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I've been sharing a little bit, but not too much, but just a, you know, like a little seed. But the big thing has been about not to document it, not to write. That has also been a thing that when after Midsummers, I said to myself, because I'm writing a new book. So one part of me was like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, if I get an urge, I'm just going to sit down and write a couple of pages. And then this thing started and I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to write anything whatsoever. Whatever comes up, I'm just going to trust it goes into my cellular system.
You know, come back when you need it.
Yeah, and I actually failed once because I had my phone and we were driving from Gothenburg to Stockholm with the family. And this great idea, I thought, occurred in my mind. I was like, this is too good of a thought not to write down. So I was like a little child in a cookie jar. I'm just going to take one. So I wrote it down really swiftly and I took the phone down and...
But I think that's valid.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just more like, does it turn into just a snowball of now I let the other part go altogether?
Yeah.
So, because, you know, sometimes those good ideas, they do sort of hide afterwards.
Yeah. And I said that to my my daughter, and she said something that was really fun. She said, like, well, maybe, Mom, that idea didn't come sooner because you constantly wrote down the, you know, the superficial ideas before. And I was like, oh, that's a really refined thought.
That's a total description of meditation.
Exactly.
That your, you know, your deepest inspiration doesn't come because your mind is full of day-to-day quotidian thoughts about what you're experiencing in the senses.
Yeah.
Yeah, from the mouth of babes. Yeah.
Very, very intelligent observation from an 11-year-old in a car.
And, you know, I mean, we both train teachers, and I think what you're saying has something to say to young teachers, too, that it's okay to just practice and teach the opportunities you have to teach and be a little quiet for a while, and then... At some point, maybe you'll have something to say that feels profound, not just like, I've been told I must maintain whatever, social media presence, or I must, you know, form my brand, or I must do something. So it's always this outward goal attached to your yoga. And I think we could all stand a little bit more of an internal approach to our yoga. That makes it deep.
Yeah. I had a student approach me with a question. She's a teacher, maybe been teaching for 5 years, six maybe, somewhere around there. And she said that she feels stressed because she feels she needs to post something every day. Or when she's at a blog, someone's blog, and it has a column where it says leave a comment or sign up for a newsletter, she feels like she has to leave a comment and have to sign up for that newsletter or whatever. And then she gets upset, and then I just said, like, well, why don't you try not to for a while and see what happens?
Right.
That's the really only way, rather than me saying that's not what you should do. The proper maybe post like one thing every other day, and maybe read up on good philosophy and match that with great photo apps and start to create your little, what do you want to communicate? You know, like what you usually do as a communication as a consultant marketer, and agent. Like, but here I was like, no, I'm just going to pitch this more into like a yogic aspect.
Yeah.
So it's like, try it out.
Yeah. And obviously that's balanced out with if you're trying to make your living, you have to do a certain amount
of course.
This stuff in order to promote yourself and whatnot.
But instead to like dare to quiet it down for a week or two and marinate it, I said. Marinate and let things come up to the surface. And from there you can begin to, because starting to build something from nothing is very hard.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you can start with one or two seeds. Like with Lego, it's very, very hard to build something unless you have like one or two bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But if you have like two or three, you can build whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. I don't have any
Lego?
Legos. No.
Well, we have a room, full of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Lego's fun.
Yeah. Yeah. So if I were to, I think, go down this path a little, I would probably say that my experiment that I'm trying to do is stay a little bit more detached from concerns about what I'm doing, who I'm meeting, what are the connections, is this an opportunity, blah, 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 to like just sort of take it in stride, in meaning like take challenges as they come, but also take opportunities as maybe this will be something interesting. You know, I meet somebody and they're involved in some kind of a something or other, and I'm like, well, maybe that's interesting. We'll see. But yeah, and not be so concerned about what comes, because I have come more and more to this feeling about the karma of things, that karma's flowing through us. We have so little say in anything besides how do we react to what's going on. You know, all of our opinions or sense that we're in control of things is really just folly.
Yeah, there's always that idea of how much you can influence and how much you cannot, you know, how much is just thing. I remember, you know, one of my first teachers in Hatha Yoga and Pranayama, he said like, okay, it's 99%. It's just things happening. You can affect 1%.
Yeah.
And we were talking about that in one of our, like, Yogi Raj, Peter, you know, Ishta.
The balance finger.
Yeah. And Elsa, like, well, maybe it's like 51 to 49. And we, like, talked about that for a long time. And and then we just agree that it doesn't really matter. It's just that...
Because you don't know. You just are living. You have to just keep living.
Yeah.
But what you're thinking about it, that's always the trick, you know? It's like the thinking about it is where you get into the unreality.
The Maya.
Just doing it. Just whatever you're doing, you know, and taking time to get out of that kind of thinking, to let those inspired connections link up and bring you the stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, when I was studying like media communication and journalism, I had this great teacher, and we talked quite a bit. To me, he's a big yogi, because he made us realize that there's a huge difference between analysis and observation. When you observe something, it means you don't necessarily have to act or evaluate if it's good or bad. It can just be like, interesting.
Right.
So you see that flower as purple. I see it as blue.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you analyze something, you go like, why do you think you see it as blue? Or maybe you have a filter in your glasses that makes them, or you connotate according to your life history. Like, it brings so much energy into it, like much more fire and much more judgment.
Yeah.
So he taught me a lot, you know, and I brought that into my yoga. So a lot of people, when I started my yoga, they never understood, like how come you say that journalism and writing and things like that inspire your yoga, and your yoga inspires your writing? How is that possible?
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to explain that to them, that when I came into the yoga world, it's like sometimes they would say the people around me would go like, okay, you can turn your spleen two and a half degrees to the right, and that's going to help the vitamin blah, blah, blah to come up more into your blood. And I'm like, how's that possible? Mm-hmm. And I found that really, really hard to believe. And they were asking me to believe so many things.
Right.
Like, you have to believe this, and it has to be this, and it has to be that. And then I started to question it. Like, how come? And they go like, don't analyze it. I'm like, that's not really what I'm trying to get. But I'm just not getting the logic behind why I want to twist my spleen to, or liver, or whatever it is.
Right.
I mean, I get, if you can tap into maybe an esoteric point of view or maybe an idea around it, but mm-hmm. can I go in and physically rotate it? Yeah, perhaps. So I went into that. And then I was just like, you know what? Maybe it's that way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's they're right. Right. You know, truth will be told eventually. I'm not going to put so much energy into it. I'm just here for the practice and whatever, you know, entails and what I don't know. And that's all going to be fine. I just had to decide.
Right.
And not go into any debates yeah. on what I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I don't know that for a fact. And then the opposite goes when I brought that mindset of the new and the unknown and what's not there, you know, helped in my writing a lot. Not to overanalyze and scrutinize my writing. And it really helped with my self-esteem. Mm. Rather than like, oh, I have to get it right, otherwise yeah. I won't get, you know, the job, or he's right. gonna... Because I was evaluating myself constantly.
Right.
And I was like, you know what? Svaha, if it works, if it works. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, it doesn't. And yeah. I made that into a practice. I didn't succeed immediately, but I was right. like, Eureka. Yeah. You know, so you suck today. Maybe you don't suck tomorrow. Mm-hmm. It was a self-talk that mm-hmm. yoga inspired
right.
in my writing. Yeah. And then my schooling and my academics inspired my yoga not to be so gullible,
yeah.
not too naive to believe everything, but
right.
believe what I found that was important for me.
Yeah, it's then. Kind of like a yama and niyama. Exactly. You're like encouraging the things that are helping you and you're discouraging the things that are not serving you.
Yeah. It's a very interesting yeah. thing that I still like think about.
Yeah.
But I think it enables us to move more into the universal truth mm-hmm. rather than belief systems. Because yeah. it's I think we have a little bit too much of that. Likes, dislikes, either or, good or bad, and yeah. off, on.
Well, we've been speaking a lot about that this weekend, that so many people are so caught up in what we would call first or second chakra issues, surviving and me. You know, mm-hmm. it's what's my identity mm-hmm. and how am I going to get my stuff? And, you know, we have a whole bunch of other centers that could be operating in a lot more exciting ways, a lot more wonderful ways. So we need to focus on that.
Yeah,
through our practices, through our lives, and our practices can serve our lives.
Exactly, and I mean, like, if we apply the idea that chakras are vortexes of energies, different types of energies, not just energy, but different types, nuances, yeah. and I find it very interesting. I want flavor in my life. Mm-hmm. That's a want. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a want, but yeah. I like to explore that want. Like, how does it look when I bring it into my throat chakra, my dialogue, my communication? Mm-hmm. With like, how does that? How do I dialogue with myself and other people? Like, mm-hmm. What that's all about—the yeah. in and the out. Yeah. It's like, is there any type of practice that can help to balance or strengthen that correspondence? Mm-hmm. What type? Then you can kind of broaden it out. And this whole idea of mine to have more of a staycation and pausing and things like that came about that I was like, this intrigued. I read an article about 3 years ago about the brain. it was fascinating in so many ways, mm-hmm. about like how much connective tissue we have in the brain and how much like square meter of possibilities we don't use. And how this professor, he talked about the only way to use more percentage of your connective tissue in your brain is to pause.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So I was like, this is a layup, mm-hmm. because I'm an old basketball mm-hmm. player. I'm like, mm-hmm. Before I put the ball in the basket, enjoy the ride, so to speak, mm-hmm. and broaden my senses and use, like Al says. And I wanted to take that even further. Like, how can I use the mind without doing?
Mm-hmm.
Then that to me is like, okay, I'm just going to create space.
Right, right. Yeah.
And see how many ways I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, and that is the yoga practice. You use your mind to get your mind to stop doing its normal stuff so that it can do what it does. With the rest of our capacity, we have the capacity. It's natural. We were speaking earlier today about different cultures and how they get to similar places because we're all human and we all function in this way and we're all living in the world and we interact with the world in a certain way. So it's quite beautiful to come around to knowing that we can do this. You know, we don't suck.
Mm-hmm.
And that little bit of naivete that says, well, I think I can do this, is all it takes to try it. And then you have an experience. You know, and we see this over and over again in trainings where you're teaching people to do something in a slightly more intensive way than you might do in a class or in even a book or something where they're just sort of learning about it. And then they have the experience and like, oh my God, I had this experience.
Mm.
And immediately their first question is that okay? Like, is what I had okay?
Mm.
You know, and I just think it's just so beautiful to have them see that they also have this other range of experience available in their lives.
Mm.
And then to watch what happens from that. Like if you are able to still talk with them over the course of a year, 2 years, 3 years, and they just
totally.
Say, wow, I mean, this has been such a valuable thing in my life. Yeah.
Well, I think that me and you and everyone on this earth, we underestimate this force that we have inside of us, that we think that if we pause and reflect, you know, a couple of times a day that we're inefficient, we don't get...
wasting
you know,
time.
Stuff done, and we just have to have this list where we check off things, and that makes us feel more validated as human beings. And it's really one illusion that gets so, you know, like I can see it now when you distance yourself a little bit from it,
mm-hmm.
and rather than saying that that's bad, this is good, you can use them both for whatever you need.
Right.
Sometimes it's really nice to check things off a list.
Right, right. Or like when you said you desire certain things, like living in life is an opportunity to enjoy life, but not to think that my happiness is coming from that stuff outside of me.
Yeah.
You know? And you only really, really know that. Like you can have a philosophy about that, but you only really know it when your practice, whatever your practice happens to be, gets you to that other place. Where you feel different when you're out in the world, having the stuff you want to enjoy in life.
Yeah.
So.
And I mean, I was teaching a workshop not too long ago, and this woman came up to me, and she goes like, "I don't know what you do, Ulrika, but you just, whatever you say, how you say it, I've done this pose 500 million times, and I've done the same class with you 600. It feels like so many times."
Mm-hmm.
But over the past 3-4 years, there's something different.
Mm.
And I was like, okay. So I started to think about it. And it was along that line of me thinking about imperative. I had this word in my brain for the longest time over a year. This is how my brain works. I get a word.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about like imperative. It's usually like an exclamation mark.
Mm.
Do it.
Yes.
Like it indicates like, oh, wow, pow. It comes from Marvel and superheroes and poof, pow. Yeah. It's like action doing or commenting, great, awesome, yay, goo, do it, boom, boom, boom. It indicates something that needs to be moving and doing with force or comments. Mm-hmm. You know, so I was like, is there any way different that I can instruct my students not bring in an exclamation mark or a point or a question mark? Because that's another thing. Like we so often as yoga teachers do, like, I go in and explore how this feels for you. Go into the reflection and notice the differences in this and this and this and that. Or just place your foot like this and use the do-do-do. It's like a lot of statements, a lot of imperatives, a lot of instructions. Like, is there any other way? You know? So I'm starting to, like, explore around. So I love Marcel Proust. Mm-hmm. All his writing. So I was like, can I make an entire class without...
No punctuation. That's great.
And I'm still playing around with that.
Well, it sounds from your student like you did.
Yeah. And it's also like, okay, now I've said something and I'm not going to comment it. I'm just going to leave a pause where I'm silent and see what happens. And it was really scary at first. And then all of a sudden, I see how they pick up their own breath. I see how they can, like, get their own alignment together just by a notion of, like, four or five different ideas. Okay, like, let's try this. This is an idea. This is an idea. This is an idea. See how you can move those together.
Yeah.
And repeat it a couple of times.
Right.
Maybe the fourth time. First, they were like, what's she trying to do? I don't understand. Okay, try the pose this way. Maybe do it this way. And this way, and then we're going to do it this way. And now you do it, maybe. Yeah. And then something, people are like, oh, I am the sorcerer, you know? And the I-ness of not me-ness was starting to appear. And that was like, that is so cool. I have to go deeper into this. Mm-hmm. So it's a whole, so I don't know where this thing is going to get me.
Yeah.
But it's too fun and too exciting and rewarding to stop.
I hope you're enjoying this edition of Peter's podcast. We'll be back to the interview in a second. I wanted to invite you to become a subscriber of this podcast. By that, I mean download it on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, but also support me on Patreon.com. This is a cool artist funding source where you can subscribe for any amount you want. I have a special category of subscriber at $1, and you can do less than that or more than that, whatever makes you feel like it's the right valuing for this information and for the effort it takes to make this podcast. I hope you'll take a look. It's at www.patreon.com/Peter's Podcast, all one word. Thanks a lot. Here is the rest of the interview.
So how's the art of living for you, Peter?
It's good, you know. Living is a fascinating thing. And, you know, when I created this podcast, I had this phrase, you said, you know, words start things for you, you know, and this notion of living deep that I think is, you know, obviously like the opposite of living in a superficial way. So we were speaking in the park today with Peter from Yoga Bee, and he was saying that, you know, some people are like on holiday and they're just checking off, I did this, I did this, I did this. And he was explaining his own sense of, I'm just living, you know, as opposed to checking things off. And, you know, I think that could be one description of deep, but doing things and accomplishing things and not necessarily like checking things off, but doing things that you could check off if you wanted to could be involved in deep living also. It's just a matter of how do you engage those things when you're doing them. And I think in my own approach, in my own way, I'm trying to get more and more in touch with the part of myself that is deep, meaning it's not superficial. It's not just about what's going on outside. It's not just about accomplishment or the life circumstances. And I'm trying to spend really intense time there. And then when I come back into my day, I kind of let go, like let go. You know, when someone asks me questions, I just speak, and it's been kind of, it's been fun. Like I listen back sometimes to what I say in meditation class before teaching a technique, or I listen back to a podcast like this where there's no script in those things. And when I hear the things I say, I don't even know that I said those things. It's just kind of interesting. It's like opening as a channel, sort of, you know? And perhaps at some point there will be more structure to the outcome. Like I think I said to you yesterday that I'm kind of in the mood for doing a project. You know, maybe that's an art project, maybe it's some kind of collaborative project. We were talking about some perspective projects. You know, so those would require more structure in the output. But for right now, I'm just really enjoying trying to be in this space of in the flow, you know, and letting that flow be deep by tapping my practice and like surrendering to that.
I think life is all about intervals. You know, like some areas of your life and moments of your life, you need to push in order to, you know, things to come to you, like insights, like, no, that was too much, or, you know, like massage, you know, like the massage therapist place their hands on your body and like, okay, let me know if it's too hard or too soft, and they begin. And if they have perfect pressure, you kind of sink into your own abode. And but if it's too hard, you can't really think about anything else than, oh my God, he's like killing me, right, or she's killing me.
Right.
Or if it's too soft, you're like, what is she
trying to do?
You know, so right. I find it very interesting. Like sometimes you need to push hard in order to like, no, that was too much. And sometimes not enough. No. And in order to find your in between, according, you know, gunas.
Yeah. I mean, that's another way to explain what I'm trying to do in my life right now. When you ask me the question.
Art of living.
Art of living, yeah. It's like to stay in sattva-guna.
Yeah, because it's an art.
Yeah.
Life is an art form.
It's a balancing act, you know? And, you know, it's taken a lot of ups and downs to see that, you know, you can deal with the ups and downs. They're hard, but you can deal with them, you know? And expecting them to not be hard is the worst way to deal with them.
Yes. You know, and I think, you know, people with an active mind or a willing mind, you know, that we want to do things and explore things, we have more of a vata, maybe persona mind, where we're like more artistic and we you know, we bring in philosophy and things like that into our living. Like, oh, that's interesting. I mean, this is just a thought of mine. Maybe it's not accurate, I don't know, it doesn't really matter, but I've been thinking about this a lot, that our world today, it's very, sometimes come across as very black and white.
Yeah.
You're either there or you're not there, or you're present or you're not present, or you're doing it or you're not doing it, you're in or you're out. You know, like, it's very polarized.
Yeah.
And so our minds get very polarized. Like when you're doing, you're so focused on doing. And when you're not doing anything, you just like, you're entertained instead.
Right.
Watching movies, reading books, blah, 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 blah.
That's what I was talking about those vacations where you're just going and you're just like
Yes.
Stop your mind. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think the mistakes needs to be happening and for you to also start to explore the void that's neither.
Right.
What's that all about? What about the gray? No one wants to be gray. Mm-hmm. You either want to be black or white or colorful or minimalistic. Mm-hmm. It's all about who are you? Are you minimalistic Peter? Are you colorful Berta or whatever? It all has to be like identifications, like who are you? I'm a hip hopper. I'm a philosopher. I'm a yogi. I'm a doctor. I'm a woman. I'm a man.
Right.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying there's also the humanness part.
Right. Yeah, well, it goes all the way back to that thing of like marketing. Mm-hmm. You know, we're all thinking we must be a something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we must market that, put it on Instagram, and then you know, it will get a lot of hits, and then we'll be famous, and then life will be good because we got great stuff from outside.
It can be awesome. I mean, sometimes when I buy something, I'm really happy about. I'm really happy about it. Like I'm really like. We bought a perfume yesterday, me and Peter.
Yeah.
One for me, one for him. And it was nice. It was fun. It was it added a component into our life. You know, just smelling oils. And I'm very intrigued, like, what made you pick that one and what made me pick that one is just interesting.
Mm-hmm.
If it was more concerned about, I need to get a perfume, then we could have just gone in and taken anything out, you know, and then leave. But, you know, to have that, no, maybe I'll take that little tomato. No, I don't like that tomato. I like the shape and form of that little cucumber instead, and maybe smell it. And, you know, those are the things.
Come into relationship with things.
Exactly. Yeah. Very well put.
And when we're not superficial, we're in a deeper relationship with things, which lifts us from those first and second chakra things up into the heart center. So then we're in proper relationship with living, which is deep.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The selection of things is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. My daughter and I were talking about that right now because if we sometimes now come into a restaurant and she sees a menu of 5 different dishes and she likes 3 of them. She comes into like, I don't know what to pick, Mom. Hmm. What should I pick? She asks me, you know, and which is pointless because I was like, okay, let's just, what kind of mood are you in? Are you really hungry? Are you really not hungry? Yeah. Or, you know, what have you eaten earlier today? And she was like, oh, can't you just say what I'm supposed to eat? And she asked her father, and he goes like, well, according to the TripAdvisor, it's supposed to be really good meatballs here.
You know,
so it's like we have all the different personas where her little brother, he goes like, do they have like spaghetti here? What kind of spaghetti do they have? I really like spaghetti. Yeah. I'm just going to have spaghetti because I know I like spaghetti or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
He goes into like whatever he makes him happy, he's going to take.
Right.
Whereas she's in that age where she wants to explore new things.
Right.
So she doesn't want to miss out on the new or whatever. It's just interesting.
Yeah. Coming into a relationship with the world, which we grow and learn to do. And I've said this before, so I'm repeating myself, but I think it's a good point that we grow up from children to adults and we learn certain things about the world, how the world works, how we work, how to interact with that, you know, what is, and then we become yogis and we start to deal with this question. A lot of times I'll start a lecture in yoga about asking students who are there for like a serious training, what is yoga?
Mm-hmm.
And they struggle to answer the question, you know, but you know, we usually get around to some component, some way of saying it's this in the relationship between me and everything else, me and the universe or me and my role in all of this. You know, so I think we go from being children to being adults and we learn a certain part of that. And then we go from being adults to being yogis or, you know, since we're in yoga, we do that. If you're in something else, you go to maybe do it that way. Hopefully you do something. And then we gain all this additional insights and additional tools and additional sense of what does that mean.
Yeah.
To be in living in a way that's artful, that's deep.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's explore this further.
Yes.
Let's see where we land next time.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you for showing me Stockholm. Mm-hmm. Again, namaste.
Namaste. Come back.
Yes.
That's our episode for today. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, please consider becoming a subscriber at patreon.com/peterspodcast. There's a link in the show notes, or you can look it up online. Look forward to talking with you again. Take care.